Fuel prices and inflation are rocketing in the U.S. The president's ordered millions of barrels of oil to be released from the country's strategic reserves. But is that going to make a difference? Or is it just a bid to boost his falling approval ratings? And why are several other countries joining in? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Rob Matheson. It's a rare move that President Joe Biden hopes will help ease U.S. petrol prices and reduce inflation that's hit a 31-year high. He's tapping into the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. 50 million barrels of oil are being released, and that's roughly what the U.S. uses in 2.5 days. Several other countries have also agreed to use their emergency reserves. Biden's critics say it's a temporary fix. Some argue it's a political move to help his sagging approval ratings. But the president says there isn't enough oil on the market to meet demand, and that's pushing up prices. He's asked the Organization of Oil-Producing Countries, known as OPEC Plus, to increase its output.
I brought together other nations to contribute to the solution. India, Japan, Republic of Korea, and the United Kingdom have agreed to release additional oil from their reserves. And China may do more as well. This coordinated action will help us deal with a lack of supply, which in turn helps ease prices.
Well, this is how America's Strategic Petroleum Reserve works. It holds just over 600 million barrels of oil, mostly in underground caverns in the southern states of Texas and Louisiana. It was created after Arab states, led by Saudi Arabia, imposed an oil embargo on the U.S. in 1973. It's designed to store oil for use in an emergency. The International Energy Agency is responsible for managing global oil supplies, and it says member countries can only release reserves during wars or natural disasters, and not just to correct prices. Well, Joe Biden isn't the first U.S. president to tap into the reserve. Barack Obama did the same in 2011 to offset disruptions in supply because of the war in Libya. Our White House correspondent Kimberly Hargett explains why the move hasn't been welcomed by everyone.
What the criticism has been is that this might resolve the issue in the short term and lead to some, in the immediate future, lower gas prices. But ultimately, because the issue of supply and demand globally has not been resolved, that this will drive the prices up. So what you heard there is the president not only saying, look, this is a global problem, but the fact that he's also saying that this will work out in the end. One point to know in all of this is that with regard to the release of these reserves, the president isn't just releasing it all overnight. In fact, there's going to be one portion done in the first 3 months and then another portion in the coming months. And this, he believes, is going to allow for this kind of staggered approach that will ensure as the supply catches up to the demand as a result of people turning the economy back on due to the COVID pandemic, that this will resolve those issues and that prices will stabilize at a lower rate. That's what this Biden administration is counting on. One other announcement in there of importance, and it really affects domestic consumers, though, is the point that the president was making that he believes oil and gas companies are exploiting this situation. And really, he accused them essentially of price gouging, of illegal behavior, that they are now seeing lower rates in the oil supply, not passing that on to the consumer. So the president announcing there that he will be investigating that.
Okay, let's bring in our panel of guests. Abhi Rajchandran is Research Director of Energy Intelligence, and he's joining us from New York. In Bern, Cornelia Meyer is an energy analyst. She's also CEO of Meyer Resource. And Henning Gloystein is Director of Energy, Climate and Resources at Eurasia Group and joins us from London. Thank you all very much indeed for being with us. Abhi, going to start with you. How much of this is about cooling down oil prices and how much of this is about President Biden's falling approval ratings?
It's a great question, and it's it's really about both. By the way, thanks for having me on today. It's really about both, and they're both quite related, right? I think the administration is fighting the messaging and the data around inflation broadly, and certainly with energy and petroleum products, it's front and center there. I think their handling of the economy is certainly one of the aspects of their polling that comes out weakest, right? So I think there's certainly a targeted plan to address that. And certainly, lowering oil prices is the goal, right? We're just about to, go into Thanksgiving weekend. I'm just about to hit the road myself in an hour, followed by, we'll have the holidays coming up later in December. There's going to be a lot of mobility, a lot of travel coming up here in the U.S. And wanting to lower the price of the pump is certainly a key priority. So it goes hand in hand for sure. I think we'll probably get to it later in the conversation. I think the focus of this is kind of short term price relief. I think there are some medium-term consequences that are going to come as a result.
Cornelia, the UAE energy minister is being reported to have said he sees no logic in the UAE putting more oil into the market because there's predicted to be, if I understand it correctly, a surplus at the start, at least in the first quarter of next year. I understand that OPEC Plus is due to meet in the early part of December. How do you think it's going to react to this?
Well, OPEC Plus will sort of have to regather on this, and they will not react much. I mean, they will, for December, it's all done, because they have, over time, released 400,000 barrels a day and this is scheduled, this increase is scheduled to go on through April. So they might just reduce that a little bit, but OPEC does foresee for the whole of 2022 actually quite a significant supply overhang, which the EIA, the American Energy Agency, and the International Energy Agency out of Paris also foresee, especially for the first quarter, a supply overhang, but not as dramatic. For OPEC, it's in the million plus barrels a day. For the others, it's in the 100 to 200,000 to 300,000 barrels a day. So there is a divergence of how people look at it. But it is pretty clear that next year, certainly in January, we will see a supply overhang.
Henning, as Abby was explaining, it seems as though it would be easy to assume that this was just a U.S. issue dealing with the prices there and also the falling approval ratings of the president there. Why have other countries joined in with this?
Thanks for the invitation as well. First of all, the participation of other countries so far is symbolic at best. So India's so far committed 5 million barrels. The UK, South Korea, Japan haven't really said how much yet. China's been doing this independently anyway. But in the case of India, Japan, South Korea, and of course Britain, it is almost certainly political support with the United States and China. I mean, Japan and South Korea are strategic allies for whom the US is the most important partner, and Britain, now freshly out of the EU, also seeks closer relationships with the United States. So this is a symbolic joining for them more than actual additions of supply. None of them will bring anywhere near as much oil to the market as the US have done. And this shows that it's largely, as was said earlier on the program, a domestic effort to reduce pump prices in the US rather than globally.
Mm. Cornelia, you mentioned before the International Energy Authority and its position in this. If I understand it correctly, it's got a rule that says countries cannot release strategic oil reserves for anything other than crisis situations, as we sort of alluded to before. But its rules also say that the IEA can't get involved if it might affect market prices. One kind of begs the question, what is the point of the IEA in a situation like this?
Well, the IEA is the agency of the OECD countries, and yes, there are the rules, but then America is the 500-pound gorilla in the room. So the 500-pound gorilla may choose to do other things. And, the question is, how do you define a crisis? I think for President Biden, this was a crisis. He has tried several times to entice OPEC Plus to lift more barrels. And they have, in my view, rightfully said, no, we will not do that. We will not be beholden to U.S. pressure. So the question is, what constitutes a crisis? And the Biden administration does not just look at it from, oh, we need petrol. I mean, we need the prices of petrol at the pump to go down. That will have a time lag, as Biden said himself. They also look at it. They're worried about the inflationary pressure, and inflation can be considered an economic crisis.
Mm. Abby, you were talking about the timeline of this earlier on, but as Cornelia was saying, was just referring to there, the president himself admits that this is not going to happen immediately. Is this actually worth doing, given the fact that the response or the reaction, if you like, isn't going to be as quick as one would imagine the Biden administration would like it to be leading up to holiday season?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I think they were effectively compelled to look like they were going to do they were going to do something, right? I think ultimately that's what it came down to. It was mentioned earlier that the contributions from India, from Japan, from South Korea, UK are just drops in the bucket in terms of what actual volume they're actually going to add to the market. What's interesting is the U.S. announcement itself is also fairly small. It's 50 million barrels, right? Of which 18 million barrels will be accelerated, pre-approved sales. It basically just brought forward. But the remaining 32 million barrels are in exchange, so they have to be replaced, over time, depending on who takes it out. The actual amount is fairly small. And as you mentioned earlier, it's going to be phased over the next several months. The U.S. consumes over 20 million barrels a day of oil per day. So an overall 50 million barrel, release is fairly marginal. I think they felt compelled to look like they were doing something. The actual impact is going to be, fairly limited. The one thing I would note, though, is, if you just kind of look back, a couple of weeks ago, oil prices were, at least for Brent, heading towards 90. So just the talk out there in the market of the fact that there was going to be an SPR release, a coordinated one, has cooled prices off. However, what was actually announced yesterday, from all the different countries, was fairly underwhelming. Right, it's hard to say exactly what the market quote unquote expected. Some have said 100 million barrel release, some have said a little bit more is what would have been needed to actually get prices to go down. Obviously, the actual amount was fairly underwhelming, but again, the it did have some effect. But in terms of the actual barrel impact, it's going to be fairly limited. So it was kind of more of an announcement for the sake of making an announcement. Mm. The actual marketing is going to be fairly negligible.
Yeah, I know both Cornelia and Henning want to make points here. Cornelia, I'm going to come to you first. Henning, I'll come to you next. Cornelia.
Well, I think, yes, it is fairly small compared to 600 million barrels a day, but it's the largest ever release of SPRs that the U.S. has undertaken. Let us not forget, during the first Gulf War in 1991, they only released 17 million barrels a day. When Libya came asunder in 2011, they released 30 million barrels a day. So in that context, it's quite a bit. And Ravi is absolutely right in terms of the oil price came down about 8% since the talk of the release of strategic reserves, and then it came up, but yesterday it rose. And to me, that is a classic in stock markets. You have this buy on the rumor and sell on the fact. And that was a classic event like this.
Henning, you wanted to make a point.
Sure. It just follows up a little bit. So I disagree slightly with one thing here. So the Biden administration clearly wanted to bring this headline out there, 50 million barrels, but it is not 50 million barrels per day. It is 50 million barrels over the stretch of 4 months, which is far less. And we don't know whether all these 50 million barrels will be released. The two tranches are separated. As was said, one of them is in a loan. The other one was already announced and approved back in 2018. So if you look at the nitty-gritty, it's actually less, and it's actually less than was for instance, the 2011 release, which was 30 million barrels over a month. So the actual volume is probably a little bit lower. However, I do fully agree that it was the action that was needed. And it was said earlier that we needed just threatening on announcing this pulled down prices over the last 4 weeks. But what has happened now is indeed that the market said, all right, part of this was already priced in, especially the smaller tranche that was announced back in 2018 and it's just being pulled forward. But the other part is, of course, that now the market is expecting OPEC to scratch its head and said, well, does the market really need the 400,000 barrels per day that we've been planning to add? And the answer is probably, or maybe, I mean, I don't really know, that they'll hesitate because, as was said earlier correctly, the market is expected to flip into oversupply. And OPEC certainly doesn't want to add to that because they've just spent 1.5 years drawing these high inventories down and trying to balance the market again. And this is a problem. The market's being politicized between producers and consumers. And that is basically not what the IEA was there for. Hence, it shouldn't be used for price influencing. And that's the problem that we see is the politicization of oil markets.
Abhi, I think you wanted to come in there.
Yeah, you know, just one point I wanted to add, which is Cornelia was referring to earlier, you know, around you know, just a mismatch in supply and demand, right? I think ultimately what this comes down to is the fact that, you know, U.S. domestic, you know, oil/liquids demand is effectively recovered from COVID already. But supply still remains, you know, significantly lower, right? You know, close to 2 million barrels a day lower, especially for oil. And I think this is sort of the key mismatch that the administration is sort of dancing around, right? That is sort of the key mismatch and topic that's going to be driving prices over the, you know, over the short to medium term. Mm. You know, the you know, obviously there's a focus on energy transition and kind of the longer term, you know, shift away from oil consumption. But short-term demand is going nowhere. In fact, you know, on our numbers, we see record U.S. oil demand, you know, as early as May or June next year, 21 million barrels a day, a number that we've never hit. And it's going to go higher from there. And simply supply is not, you know, keeping up at all. And I think the fact that demand continues to go higher actually makes the drawdown of the SPR, you know, kind of a more, you know, dangerous tool when you think about, you know, where demand could go next summer and how tight the market could be next summer and beyond. So just wanted to add that in there. Happy to, you know, throw more color on that. But I think the short-term release is actually quite short-sighted in terms of where demand is going to be going over the next 6 to 12 months and beyond.
Cornelia, somebody made the point earlier, and I don't understand how the oil market works, you guys do, so I'm relying on you. But without wanting to oversimplify too much, one would imagine that if you're going to get rid of what is, if I understand what you guys are saying, a relatively small amount, comparatively speaking, if that is going to be released onto the market, that still has to be replaced, and one would imagine that replacing that is going to leave the US and others open to having to buy that replacement oil, one would imagine, at a higher cost. And that seems counterproductive. Tell me if that is going to, how that actually works.
Well, it may work. But then again, OPEC has forecasted a really substantial oversupply for the whole of next year. And yes, demand in the US may go up. But look at what's happening in Europe now. You know, we are not, nobody thinks we're out of the woods with the virus yet. And if you look at the new lockdowns in Europe, if you look at what's happening in Asia also with the virus. So, you know, how quickly will tourism, will international air travel really rebound? Where you have a big domestic market, yes, it will rebound, but how much, how quickly will it really, and how sustainably will it rebound over the next year, so as long as we're still stuck with this virus? So there is that. And then we have one other thing. We have seen that the US shale producers have not really upped their production either. They have not stepped up to the challenge, so to speak, because they too are very sort of wary of where it's going. So it's nice to have good demand forecasts, but the proof of the pudding there is in the eating. And again, these demand supply forecasts vary so differently between what OPEC sees, what the International Energy Agency sees, and what the US Energy Information Agency sees, that it's really hard to get a neutral picture of this.
Henning, I want to come back to a point that you were making earlier about whether or not the oil companies are actually going to buy in on any of this this loan or these sales and so on. I mean, President Biden has asked the Federal Trade Commission to immediately investigate whether illegal activity by oil and gas companies is pushing up gas prices. One would imagine that at least some of those companies are going to be the ones that he's going to want to take this oil. Is that going to work counterproductively for him?
I've got no idea whether there was illegal activity in the US oil market, to be honest. But it is an interesting point that, and perhaps underreported or undernoticed, that releasing SPRs by the US government isn't just dumping all this crude oil into some big pool that everyone then gets. It needs takers. And the first tranche, as we mentioned, is a loan. So if you take a loan now that you have to repay in a couple of years' time, you are effectively taking a bet on future oil prices. And it depends very much on the conditions that this loan will be offered at, whether you want it or not. And the second tranche also will be put out in an auction or tender. And it just will depend on whether the private oil industry figures that's a good deal, because this is a big difference between the US and, for instance, China, which has also released SPRs over the last couple of months. China, A, isn't part of the International Energy Agency, so they're not bound by this pledge to not influence prices. They're quite open about whether they like prices or not. And also, in China, the vast majority of oil companies are state-controlled, so the government can just order them what to do. That is not the case in the US, and that all makes it a little bit more complicated there.
Cornelia, I know you wanted to come in here. Go ahead.
I totally agree with Henning, and I just would like to add one element here. I have a little bit of a heart for oil companies here and for oil producers, because on one hand, you tell them, or the world tells them, well, fossil fuels, we really have to phase you out. On the other hand, one asks them in the medium or in the short term to invest because they're terribly underinvested. If you look last year, 400 billion were invested in upstream oil and gas, which is about half of what was invested in 2014. So they're terribly underinvested. So we ask them to invest to produce, but we say basically you're the dinosaurs, we want to phase you out. And that makes it a little bit difficult, with all the ESG, which we all want to save the planet. Don't get me wrong, we all want to save the planet. But with all the ESG obligations that these companies are facing, and the uncertain future, and the very uncertain regulatory environment in especially OECD countries, it's really a tough spot that they're in.
Abby, I know you wanted to come in there. We're getting to about a minute and 15 seconds left on the show. So if I can ask you to be relatively brief about how you want to respond.
Sure. I'll be very quick. Just to extend the point on companies, the companies' CapEx and spending budgets are controlled by Wall Street, right? Investors are the ones to go look to if you want to increase short-term supply. And that's really where the administration should be, making their phone calls if they want companies to produce more. It's not the companies themselves. And then the second point I wanted to make is, you had mentioned it earlier, one of the things that's most closely linked to oil prices is our inventory levels and, days of forward cover, right, for future demand. Demand continues to go up. Yeah, there'll be virus issues over the short term, but as we saw with the Delta variant, they're pretty transient. We see oil demand growth back to pre-COVID levels in 6 to 9 months and going out for the next, 7 to 10 years. And if there's not enough supply to keep up with that, it's going to continue to draw down inventories. The more you draw down inventories, of which, of course, SPRs are a part of it, the more you put upward pressure on prices. Mm-hmm. So, I think the quick point is this is all just sort of setting up for, multi-year, upward pressure on oil prices. even if there's some short-term relief to get through Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Abhi, thank you very much indeed. We're going to leave it there. And I want to say thanks to all our guests, Abhi Aranjadran, Cornelia Meyer, and Henning Goldstein. And thank you, too, of course, for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. For me, Rob Matheson, and the whole team here, goodbye for now.